tragedy and triumph. And in many ways, those words, tragedy and triumph, they are a summary of the life and the death of the final judge described for us in the book of Judges. And as we contemplate what the scriptures reveal to us about this man named Samson, there really is a lot that saddens our hearts, isn't there? We contemplate Samson, and we consider him, and it seems as if there is so much going for him. He had so much potential. He was chosen of God even before birth to be the agent of God's deliverance from the nation's enemy, the Philistines. He was endued with supernatural strength. He served as Israel's judge for 20 years. Samson was a man with God-given gifts. He had incredible potential. He had a high and a holy calling from God. Sadly, though, Samson far too often squandered his potential, and he used his ability for what seemed like a rather self-centered way or self-centered purpose. And far too often it seems that Samson was intent on doing things that pleased him instead of doing what pleased God. And we study Samson's life, and already we've considered three chapters, and this evening we'll look at the final chapter in Judges about Samson. And as we consider Samson's life, there's so much of his life that we could call tragedy. How much of his life appears to be focused on indulging in the fleeting pleasures of sin? His lust for women, his poor judgment, his foolish choices, these things caused so much trouble for him. We have his humiliation at the hands of the Philistines at the end of his life. We'll see that this evening. We could deem that a sad chapter not only in his own life, but in the history of the nation. So much of Samson's life we could call tragedy. But not all of Samson's life we could call tragedy, because there's much in Samson's life that is triumph. Yes, Samson, I believe, was a very self-centered man, and he was very intent, it appears, to be doing what he wanted to do, indulging his desires, instead of doing what God wanted him to do. But yet we realize God still used him to fulfill his purpose and his plan. God used him in a great way, and Samson indeed was a savior who began to deliver Israel from the hand of the Philistines. We consider the time in which Samson lived in the nation of Israel, and Israel at that point in time, as a whole, they were content to live under the authority, under the control of a foreign nation, under the Philistines. And they would much prefer to keep peace and the status quo rather than to fight against the enemy and try to gain independence. But Samson, in the midst of days such as these in which nobody wanted to fight the Philistines, Samson was willing to fight, and fight he did. Consider what we've seen already. He fought against the Philistines. He inflicted great harm upon them. It all started with his killing of 30 men in the city of Ashkelon. And he killed those 30 men so that he'd take their clothes and give them to the 30 companions at his wedding feast. And then later on we read that he delivered a blow against Philistia by destroying valuable crops. You remember how he caught 300 foxes and tied them tail to tail with the torch in between their tails and let them loose? And imagine the destruction, so many crops, whether it was wheat or barley, all of the standing grain in the sheaves, and we have the olive trees and the vineyards set on fire, destroyed. That was a great blow. And then he killed more of the Philistines with a great slaughter. And then he humiliated the Philistines. He killed 1,000 of their soldiers with the jawbone of a donkey. And then, as we'll see this evening, he carried away the gate of a Philistine city, the doors and the bar and the posts. He killed thousands of the enemy in the final act of his life. So we have little victories, we have big victories, but God used Samson to inflict great harm and just judgment upon the Philistines. And this evening we come to the final chapter in the book of Judges, the final chapter that is that relates to the life and the death of Samson. And we're struck with the tragedy of Samson's life as well as the triumph of his life and his death. And there's so much in this chapter that will sadden us, perhaps even more than what we've seen earlier. But how much God used this man to fulfill his plan and his good purpose. Judges chapter 16, if you're using one of our pew Bibles, is page 296. This chapter is a chapter of tragedy and triumph. And our chapter begins with verse 1. We read this, "Then Samson went to Gaza, and there saw an harlot, and went in unto her." And to put things into context, It might be helpful for us to read the last verse of the previous chapter. We read that Samson judged Israel in the day of the Philistines 20 years. So here is Samson for 20 years. He is judging the nation of Israel. And very well, it may have been his act previous of killing 1,000 Philistines with the jawbone of a donkey. It may have been that act that led Israel to realize Samson is our leader and we want him to be our leader. And essentially, it seems that that act inaugurated Samson's leadership over the nation. And he would have been acknowledged by his fellow Israelites as a man chosen by God to be their judge. And we know very little of what happened during those 20 years of Samson's judgeship. We wonder, well, was there any further conflicts between Samson and the Philistines? Did Samson live a life that was above reproach, or was he living in such a way that he was playing with sin or indulging with sin? We don't know all the answers. But we do know that what was probably at the end of his judgeship, Samson made some very tragic choices. And we read about Samson going to the Philistine city of Gaza. And there are five major cities of the Philistines. There's Ashdod, Gaza, Ashkelon, Gath, and Ekron. And Gaza would have been the farthest to the south. And we could even say that it would probably be the deepest within enemy territory. It was considered the chief city of the Philistine Pentapolis. So of the five cities, it was like the major city, the most prominent city. And we wonder, well, why did Samson go so far south into a Philistine city? You know, did he have a matter of business to attend to? Did he go there to purchase something? We don't know why he went to the city. I don't think he went to that city just to find a prostitute. Because you think about the day and age in which he lived, there probably were any number of cities he could have gone to find a prostitute. But while he was there in Gaza, he finds a woman that attracts him, apparently. And he sees this prostitute, and Samson desired her, and he went into her dwelling for her ungodly services. And already from a spiritual point of view, the chapter is beginning on a note of tragedy, isn't it? This is not how things should be going, and how wrong it is for any man to commit sexual sin as Samson did. But you consider Samson's role as a leader in Israel, a judge, someone that men and women would look up to. You consider how Samson was a Nazarite, how he was to be set apart as holy to God, how terrible it was for Samson in Gaza, a Philistine city, to see a prostitute, to go into her and commit sexual immorality. That's a tragic beginning to this chapter. And surely Samson would have known the dangers of getting involved with such women. You know, surely his father and his mother from childhood would have taught him the danger of women such as these, the spiritual danger. Don't go down that road. We read the words of Solomon in the book of Proverbs, and time again we have warnings against, you know, sexual immorality. And of course, Solomon lived after Samson's time, but still the words that he says are very true. And we find these words in Proverbs chapter 5, verses 3 through 5. For the lips of a strange woman drop as in honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. Okay, so her appearance is very appealing. You know, she is very seductive. A young man wants that woman, but her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold on hell. Surely Samson understood what Solomon was talking about here, even though Solomon hadn't written these words yet. And there's much more that could be said about this, but we continue on in the narrative, and we read this in verse 2. And it was told the Gazites, saying, Samson has come hither. And they compassed him in, and laid wait for him all night in the gate of the city, and were quiet all the night, saying, in the morning, when it is day, we shall kill him. So here is Samson, in a faraway city, at least a faraway city from where he would have been living, no doubt, deep in Philistine territory, and his arrival in Gaza did not go unnoticed. And that shouldn't surprise us, because Samson was quite the notorious individual. He was known throughout Philistia as a man who had wreaked much trouble and chaos and caused so much trouble. And so there were some in Gaza that saw Samson enter the city. And whether they saw exactly where he ended up at or they just saw him in the city, but there were some in that city of Gaza that saw him. And then they reported to the Gazites, probably the leadership in Gaza, said, Samson's here. And then the Gazites took measures to apprehend Samson. And our verse tells us that they compassed or surrounded And in the King James, it talks about they compassed him in. You notice that the word him is in italics, so that's supplied. So they compassed. What did they compass? What did they surround? And it seems as if, yes, they surrounded him. Was it the house that he was in? Is that what they surrounded? Or did they even know where he was exactly? Did they surround the city with troops? We don't know for sure, but they compassed and they laid wait for him all night in the gate of the city. They set certain ones there in that gate. They waited quietly all night. And the idea was, we'll catch him when he stirs in the morning. And then we'll be able to kill him. Now, the strategy of the Philistines made sense. You know, surround, whether it's the city or the house, and put soldiers in the gate, and so that whenever Samson's ready to leave in the morning, we can fall upon him and kill him. The strategy made sense, but Samson was no ordinary man, and Samson was far from predictable. And the narrative continues in verse 3, and Samson lay till midnight, and arose at midnight, and took the doors of the gate of the city, and the two posts, and went away with them, bar and all, and put them upon his shoulders and carried them up to the top of an hill that is before Hebron. This is an incredible act of strength that Samson did here. Now, lest we get focused so much on the incredible act of strength, let's think about the Philistines. First of all, what had the Philistines done? And what were they expecting? They were expecting Samson to spend all night with the harlot, with the prostitute, and then to get up in the morning. But what did Samson do? He caught them off guard, and he got up at midnight and decided he's going to leave. Why is that the case? Did he know that the Philistines were planning something against him, and so he's going to catch them off guard? Or what, did he have enough of his sinful pleasure? We don't know for sure what was going on through his mind, but he got up in the middle of the night, at midnight. And nothing in the verse is telling us about the Philistines. So what happened to the Philistines here that were surrounding either the house or the city? What about the Philistines, the soldiers that would have been in the gate? I could have put up a picture of what the gate would have looked like, but in essence, leading up to the doors of the city, you would have a corridor of sorts with little compartments, and the soldiers would be able to station themselves. In order to go through the gate, you'd have to pass by those compartments, and you have soldiers in there. Well, what happened to those soldiers that are waiting quietly all night? Had they fallen asleep? Nothing is said about them. Nothing is said about conflict at all. So it makes you wonder, are they asleep? Is this just a natural sleep, or is this a divinely induced sleep? So many questions. So nothing is said about the Philistines. Nothing about the ones that surrounded either the house or the city. Nothing is said about the soldiers waiting for him at the gate. But there's no confrontation suggested by the text. Our attention is directed toward the securely closed doors of the gate of the city. Now, of course, it is customary practice in cities of those days. Of course, they're walled cities. You'd have the gate closed at night, and it would be securely shut, with the idea, if the gate is shut, then any intruders, any people that we don't want coming into the city, they'd be kept out. They'd be kept out by the walls and the closed gates, the closed doors of those gates. In this case, the closed gates, the Philistines were hoping, would keep Samson in until they were ready to fall upon him in the morning. But gates and bars and doors and posts, they were not enough to keep Samson in a city whenever he's intent to going out. So he comes to these closed gates, the doors of the gates, and he doesn't just break or remove the bar or the lock or whatever it is that's keeping the doors closed. That's too simple. That's too normal for Samson. He wanted to do something that would make the Gazites remember him, something that would show them how great he is and how little they were. I think that's what's going through Samson's mind here. So instead of going through the doors of the gate, he tore the doors and the posts away from the wall of the city with the bars still intact. And what does he do? He puts them on his shoulder. He carries them away to a hill by the Israelite town of Hebron. So to better understand the magnitude of what Samson did, consider first of all how heavy these doors and posts along with the bar, how heavy these would be. And we don't know for sure, but it's been estimated that they weigh anywhere between 5,350 pounds and 10,700 pounds. Okay, these were massive doors and bar and posts, and massive. They weighed a lot. And it's beyond imagination, really, that any ordinary man could lift up such a structure as big as this, as heavy as this, and then to hoist them on one's shoulders. It's just beyond comprehension. But there's more to this than that. Samson carried these from the coastal town of Gaza. Remember, it's the southernmost Philistine city in the Pentapolis. and he carried them to the town of Hebron, close to 40 miles away. Imagine that. And not only that, they were carried uphill. So you have the coastal plain, quite a bit lower in elevation than Hebron, which is quite a bit higher in elevation. He's going an increase of elevation close to 3,200 feet. Okay, who could do such a thing? If it wasn't in the Bible, we would think this is material for myths. Okay, you'd think about, you know, some of the Greek myths or the Roman myths. But this is in the Bible, and this is true. This really happened. God gave the superhuman strength to Samson. Can you imagine the Gazites when they wake up in the morning? There's the gate. There's nothing in the gate. The doors are gone. The posts are gone. The bar is gone. Wide open. How humiliated they would have been. How shamed they would have been. And they would have realized, Samson, yes, he was in our city. He's no longer in our city. And he took the gates, the doors, the posts. He took them all away. And then imagine the men of Hebron, the Israelites, how shocked they would have been to see the gates of Gaza at their back door. Yeah, incredible. And they realized, no doubt, Samson is the one that did this. So, no bloodshed on this occasion as far as we know, but still, is this a victory for Samson? This is definitely a victory for Samson. This is triumph for him. You can imagine the people of Hebron, maybe shouts of triumph as they see the doors and the bars of this Philistine city, the city gate. Triumph. But yet, what do we have? We have triumph after the tragedy. Tragedy and triumph. So our chapter begins with disappointment over sin, and then amazement over God's enablement of his chosen servant. And the theme continues through the rest of the chapter, but the note of tragedy is far more frequent than the note of triumph. We continue on in verse 4, and it came to pass afterward that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. From the coastal plain of Gaza, south in the Philistine country, we now come to the valley of Sorek. And this is the valley, and you imagine, I should have put a map up here for us to look at, but it is a valley, and you have Israelite towns, the towns of Zorah and Eshtaol to the north. You have the Philistine city of Ekron to the south. And it's here that Samson met another woman, and this woman apparently was far different than any other woman that Samson had met. We think about other women that we know about that had interactions with Samson, and I'm sure that there were many, but of what we read in the text, we have his wife in Timnath. We have the prostitute that we just read about in Gaza. Of neither of these women do we find their names. Of neither of these women do we read that Samson loved them. But now what do we find in verse 4? He loved a woman in the valley of Sorek whose name was Delilah. So this is the first time in Samson's whole narrative here that we find a woman named. We don't even know the name of Samson's mother. Samson's mother is known as the wife of Manoah. But here, we find a woman that Samson loved, and her name was Delilah. Now, there's no background given to us about Delilah. We would assume that she is a Philistine, although we can't jump to conclusions necessarily. Maybe she was an Israelite. We'd think that she'd be a Philistine, but she might be some other nationality as well. But we know, beyond any doubt, as we continue through the narrative here, that her loyalties do not lie with Samson. They lie somewhere far else. And so look at verse 5. The lords of the Philistines came up unto her and said unto her, entice them and see wherein his great strength lieth, and by what means we may prevail against him, that we may bind him to afflict him. And we will give thee every one of us 1,100 pieces of silver. The scenario is Samson loves Delilah. And as we realize with young men who are in love, they're going to make every effort that they can to go visit their young lady or older lady, whatever it is, their lady. And so I'm sure Samson made every effort that he could to visit Delilah because he loved her. And so frequent visits, it didn't take long for the Philistines to realize there is an opportunity here for us to exploit Samson's love for this woman named Delilah. Samson was enamored with this woman. And his love for the Delilah here is the opportunity the Philistines may have been looking for. And you see how important this opportunity is in the eyes of the Philistines. You see how Delilah is approached by the lords of the Philistines, the leaders of Philistia. So they don't send messengers to Delilah and say, well, here's a proposal for you. No, they don't even send just one or two of their lords So keep in mind, there are five major Philistine cities, and I tend to think that you'd have a lord or a ruler from each of the Philistine cities coming to Delilah. So here are the most important men of Philistia coming to Delilah with an offer. They don't try to threaten her. They don't try to intimidate her. They ask her, entice Samson, and find out the secret of his strength. Because we want to bind him, we want to afflict him, and if you find this information out for us, each one of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver. So if indeed there are five lords of the Philistines that came and visited her, how many total pieces of silver would she have? She would have 5,500 pieces of silver. And in our day, very likely, Delilah would be a millionaire. Okay, so this is a huge payoff for Delilah. And Delilah, we don't find her response in so many words, but we do find her response by way of how she reacts to, or how she acts with Samson in the next verse. She accepts the offer clearly, because look at verse 6, and Delilah said to Samson, tell me, I pray thee, wherein thy great strength lieth, and wherewith thou mightest be bound to afflict thee. Delilah agreed to the request. She was wanting that money. But we wonder in our minds, at least I wonder in my mind, why was Delilah not a little bit more, you know, a little bit more underhanded? You know, what does she do? She just comes right out and says to Samson, tell me, please. Okay, she says, I pray thee. So please tell me, Samson, what is the strength, what is the secret of your great strength? And please tell me how you could be bound or tied up so that somebody could afflict you or torture you. Wouldn't Delilah want to be a little bit more, you know, underhanded or a little bit more, you know, not as straight to the point here? Now, maybe Samson made some poor choices. Maybe he's not the wisest of persons, but Samson certainly is not stupid. But let's think about Delilah. Do you think Delilah was stupid either? I don't think she was stupid by any means. I think she was quite smart. And she knew Samson. I think that she knew him quite well. His personality, his likes, his dislikes, his strengths and his weaknesses. And so maybe she thought that this is the best way to get the information that I need. And maybe as she said what she did, she was presenting herself as someone who wanted to be truly his lover. And if you're going to be my lover, she might be saying, I need to be your confidant. You know, you need to open your heart wide to me. So don't keep anything secret. So you need to be telling me what the secret is of your strength, how somebody could bind you. Maybe kind of as a hypothetical situation. Or maybe she's just kind of doing this maybe in a playful manner or seductive too, because that's what the Philistines even said, entice Samson. So maybe a mix of these things. But maybe playfully telling Samson, well, tell me how you're so strong and how could somebody tie you up, and just kind of playing a game here. And from what we know of Samson already, Samson is a man who likes to play games. And Samson is more than willing to play the game with Delilah here. So what do we read in the next verse? Verse 7, and Samson said unto her, if they bind me with seven green withs that were never dried, then shall I be weak and be as another man. Now in the King James it talks about these green withs, and we don't use words like that as far as a with. We don't use that. If you look at the Hebrew, and a lot of people would say that these green withs are probably referring to either animal tendons or animal guts, from a freshly slaughtered animal, and you could use these tendons or guts maybe as bowstrings or tent ropes. That's the suggestion anyway. So Samson's saying here, if you tie me up with these, then I will become weak as any other man. Well, Delilah is wondering, well, are you serious or not, Samson? Well, I better see if indeed what you're telling me is true or not. And there's only one way to find out. So we read in verses 8 and 9, then the lords of the Philistines brought up to her seven green withs which had not been dried, and she bound him with them. Now there were men lying in wait, abiding with her in the chamber. And she said unto him, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he brake the withs as a thread of tow is broken when it toucheth the fire. So his strength was not known. Delilah was told something by Samson. What does she do with that information? She tells the lords of the Philistines, and the lords of the Philistines bring the required tendons or gut or whatever it is exactly that Samson was talking about here. And Delilah binds Samson, ties him up. And then also, no doubt after Samson had fallen asleep, there were Philistine soldiers with Delilah there in the chamber. Or maybe they had entered in even before Samson had come in. But we do have the men lying in wait, abiding with her in the chamber. So here is Samson. He's asleep. He's tied up with these gut or tendons. And then all of a sudden, Delilah yells out, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson!" And what happens? Samson wakes up, and he snaps the withes, the tendons, the gut, and he does it so easily as if it was just a thread, and you have a thread touching the flame of a fire, and what happens? All of a sudden, it's just gone. No problem at all for Samson. Now, Samson no doubt ran. He fled. He didn't want to be around when the Philistines knew that he was there, and maybe he was thinking of himself, maybe he was thinking of Delilah, and maybe he just wanted to just get out of there for now, let things cool down. But it wouldn't take long before Samson was back with Delilah. And so Samson won round one of the game. Now it's time for round two of the game. Verse 10, "And Delilah said unto Samson, Behold, thou hast mocked me and told me lies. Now tell me, I pray thee, wherewith thou mightest be bound." Again, I think Delilah, in a playful manner, tells Samson, You haven't been kind to me. You know what you did to me before the other day or the other night? You mocked me. You lied to me. But now you need to tell me the truth. So what does Samson say to the question, "How can you be bound?" Verse 11, "And he said unto her, If they bind me fast with new ropes that never were occupied, then shall I be weak and be as another man." Now, maybe this answer seemed more probable than the previous answer. It was worth a try, so Delilah did exactly as he had said. We read in verse 12, "Delilah therefore took new ropes and bound him therewith and said unto him, The Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And there were liers in wait abiding in the chamber, and he brake them from off his arms like a thread." So maybe Delilah had the new rope in her house. Maybe she had to go and buy some new rope. Maybe the Philistines brought her the new rope. Again, it was while Samson was asleep, no doubt, that Delilah bound him with the new ropes, and with the men in hiding even, she woke him up, and the alarm, "The Philistines are upon you!" And would those ropes hold him, the new ropes, the ropes that had never been used? No, these ropes were not the secret to his strength. And he broke the new ropes just like a thread, and he was strong as ever. So we have round two of the game over. And keep in mind, too, as we have this conversation, so Samson, he says, first of all, if you use these tendons or guts or whatever and tie me up with them. So how quickly did Delilah get these things? It may have taken some time, maybe a day or two. So keep in mind, there may be a bit of time between Samson telling Delilah a suggestion or his answer to her question and the time when Delilah actually took the action. Same with the new ropes, perhaps. But then we come now to verse 13. And we have round three of the game. And Delilah still wants to know the secret of Samson's strength. Verse 13, "And Delilah said unto Samson, Hitherto thou hast mocked me and told me lies. Tell me wherewith thou mightest be bound. And he said unto her, If thou weavest the seven locks of my head with the web." Now with this answer, Samson is inching closer and closer to actually telling Delilah the secret to his strength. And he says, "Do this with my hair. So weave the seven locks of my hair into the web." So I envision, he has them braided somehow, perhaps, into seven locks. So Delilah would have to unbraid them and then incorporate his hair into the unwoven cloth, the web, that had already been in the womb, in the loom. And then Samson said, "If you do this, you'll be like any other man." Now, it seems rather odd, but Delilah, she couldn't just go on and ignore this answer of Samson. And so we read in verse 14, "She fastened it with the pin and said unto him, The Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he waked out of his sleep and went away with the pin of the beam and with the web." Again, I believe Samson was asleep. And Delilah did just as Samson had said. She wove his hair. So you can imagine this, quite the scenario here. Weaving his hair into the cloth that was with her womb, not her womb, her loom, and she then tightened it with the pin of the beam. And then she woke him up as before. "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." And I think Samson here would have gotten a chuckle, because here he is, he's waking, and he's dashing off, and he has his hair still woven into the cloth, and he's running away with the hair, the cloth, the pin, and maybe the loom trailing behind him. And I think he's having fun with this. He ran away, and I think Samson's having a fun time. And maybe he was having so much fun he couldn't wait to get back. and how long it took him to get back, but he went back eventually. And then we have verse 15. And keep in mind, we have three rounds of the game so far. Samson has won each of the rounds. Now is round four. And she said unto him, how canst thou say, I love thee, when thine heart is not with me? Thou hast mocked me these three times, and hast not told me wherein thy great strength lieth. What we read here with Delilah confronting Samson, it reminds us of what happened early on, whenever Samson was at the wedding party, and his wife in Timnath was confronting him. Tell me this, the answer to the riddle. You know, how can you say you love me when you didn't tell me the answer to the riddle? Well, earlier, with the wife, the bride in Timnath, the answer to the riddle was important to a certain extent, but not nearly as important as what the answer is that Delilah is seeking. And here it seems that Delilah has had enough of the fun and games, and now she was intent on getting the answer no matter what. And so just like the bride at Timnath who kept on pestering and bothering Samson, now Delilah kept pressing him for an answer. And no longer was it fun for Samson. In fact, Delilah was pressing him so hard that he was really exasperated. And now Samson is going to lose this round of the game. We read verses 16 and 17. And it came to pass when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him so that his soul was vexed unto death, that he told her all his heart and said unto her, there hath not come a razor upon mine head, for I have been a Nazarite unto God from my mother's womb. If I be shaven, then my strength will go from me. Then shall I become weak and be like any other man. So Delilah, day after day after day, pester, just keep on going at Samson. And at last, Delilah won the game, and Samson gave in. Delilah wore him down. And even as I mentioned before, Samson became vexed or exasperated, even to the point of death. And it seemed as if Samson felt no other option available than to tell her the truth, to bare his soul to her. There's no resisting now. And Samson bared his soul. And he told his lover all that, as far as the secret. He had never cut his hair, never had a razor come upon his head. He was a Nazarite to God from his very conception. And if he were to be shaved, then his strength would depart, and he'd be like any other man. And then we continue reading verses 18 through 21. And when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, come up this once, for he hath showed me all his heart. Then the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and brought money in their hand. And she made him sleep upon her knees, and she called for a man, and she caused him to shave off the seven locks of his head. And she began to afflict him, and his strength went from him. And she said, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he woke out of his sleep and said, I will go out as at other times before and shake myself. And he wist not that the Lord was departed from him. The Philistines took him and put out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with the fetters of brass, and he did grind in the prison house. So on that night, the fun and the games ended for Samson. He disclosed his secret. Delilah knew now the secret of his strength. Delilah told the Philistines, and Delilah knew that Samson had bared his entire soul, disclosed everything. And so the lords of the Philistines themselves came with money in hand, all 5,500 pieces of it, if we're right with the five lords of the Philistines. And Samson, he was asleep, even had fallen asleep there on Delilah's knees, as we read. I believe it was this time that he fell asleep on her knees. And there's he asleep, and Delilah calls for a man, and that man was to shave off the locks of his head, the locks of the hair. And so one, after another. And then all of a sudden, whenever he's bald as can be, she called out, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And he woke up, and maybe he didn't realize right away what had happened. And he thought, well, I'm going to escape just like I've always escaped. But this time was different. His strength was gone. No longer was the Lord with him. And the Philistines fell upon him. They gouged out his eyes. They brought him down south to Gaza. And there with fetters of brass, he was forced to do the most menial and humiliating tasks. He was forced to grind grain like a woman or like a slave. And a sad tale of tragedy this is. The one who had such potential, the one who was chosen by God for a special task, this one was now maimed and bound and shamed by his enemies. And all because Samson had played with fire. He put his so-called love for a woman before his commitment to God. And he succumbs to this woman's power. A mighty man who is Samson succumbed to the power of the influence of this woman. And now he, a prisoner, was tormented and ridiculed by his enemies. But the story's not over yet, because we read in verse 22, "Howbeit the hair of his head began to grow again after he was shaven." And then we read verses 23 and following, "Then the lords of the Philistines gathered them together to offer great sacrifice unto Dagon their god, and to rejoice, for they said, 'Our God hath delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hand.' And when the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, 'Our God hath delivered into our hands our enemy, and the destroyer of our country, which slew many of us.'" Here's Samson. He's maimed. He's shackled. He's grinding grain in the prison. And for the Philistines, things couldn't get any better, because their tormentor, their one that was causing them such pain, was now at their disposal, now under their control. The Philistines were rejoicing, and they gathered together for a good, big celebration. And from their perspective, Dagon, their god, had delivered Samson into their hands. Samson, the one who had done so much harm to them, killed so many of them, destroyed their crops, he was now their prisoner. And this god of the Philistines, called Dagon, for a long time was considered the fish god. But anymore, the tendency is to view this god as the god of grain. And in a way, you know, how apropos or how appropriate, at least from the Philistines' eyes. So here's Samson, the one who destroyed so much of the grain harvest. And Samson at that point in time seemed to have victory over Dagon, the grain god. But what is Samson doing now? He's grinding grain, and he's under the authority of Dagon, their god. At least that's the Philistines' perspective. Of course, that's not how things really are. That's the view of the Philistines. And they were so happy that Samson was now subdued. There was a great merriment and rejoicing and partying. And then we continue reading verse 25. "And it came to pass when their hearts were merry that they said, 'Call for Samson that he may make us sport.' And they called for Samson out of the prison house, and he made them sport, and they set him between the pillars. And Samson said unto the lad that held him by the hand, 'Suffer me that I may feel the pillars whereupon the house standeth, that I may lean upon them.' Now the house was full of men and women, and all the lords of the Philistines were there, and there was upon the roof about 3,000 men and women that beheld while Samson made sport." So imagine all the frivolity as the Philistines were at the temple of Dagon, rejoicing that Samson has been conquered, he's been subdued, and the people start calling out for entertainment. And so, "Let Samson come and let him entertain us." And so they brought him from prison, and Samson started entertaining them. And Samson was put in a strategic place so that everybody, no doubt, could see Samson entertaining. You know, everybody wanted to see him. But this was also a strategic place for Samson, because it was while he was standing there between two main pillars that a thought occurred to him. And maybe he was really tired from all the entertaining and all the drudgery of the prison and all the hard times. And maybe as he was asking the young lad that he wanted to feel the pillars where the house that supported the house so he could lean upon them, maybe he really was tired. But I think there was a thought that occurred to him. Here are the two main pillars. Let me feel them. Let me see where they're at. And in that temple were thousands of people. You have the ground level. There are many people. On the roof, you have 3,000. Keep in mind, all the leaders of the Philistines were there, all the important people. And it's from this temple that Samson entertained the people. And all the Philistines are praising their god, this false god Dagon. But it was here that Samson, blinded, weak as any other man, who would call upon the Lord. We see in verse 28. "And Samson called unto the Lord and said, 'O Lord God, remember me, I pray thee, and strengthen me, I pray thee, only this once, O God, that I may be at once avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes.'" Now remember, once before we read that Samson called out to the Lord. And that was after he had killed the 1,000 with the donkey's jawbone. He was so thirsty that he felt like he was going to die, so he called upon the Lord that he would give him drink. And the Lord answered that prayer. At that point in time, Samson was at what we would call the prime of his life. But now Samson was under the authority of the Philistines. He had been in prison. He was maimed. He was a spectacle to be jeered at. What could Samson do now against his enemies? He was helpless. And Samson realized he himself could do nothing, but he knew that there was somebody that could do something for him. It was the Lord. And he called to the Lord at this lowest point of times in his life. And Samson asked the Lord to remember him to take note of his misery and his shame. And Samson prayed to God to give him strength, strength like he had enjoyed for so much of his life. Samson wanted to be strong once more, one last time. He desperately wanted to exact revenge upon the Philistines. The Philistines had gouged out his eyes, and he wanted to pay back the Philistines for doing that. So in essence, Samson is saying, Lord, give me strength once more. Let me pay back these miserable Philistines. Let me pay them back for the wrong that they did to me. Samson prayed. But did the Lord hear the prayer of Samson? We look at verse 29. And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars upon which the house stood, on which it was borne up, of the one with his right hand and of the other with his left. And Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. And he bowed himself with all his might, and the house fell upon the Lord's and upon all the people that were therein. So the dead which he slew at his death were more than they which he slew in his life. The Lord heard Samson's prayer, and the Lord granted his request. And for one last time, God had given him supernatural strength. And with his last words, Samson cried out, let me die with the Philistines. And with this, he used one arm to push down one pillar and the other arm to push down another pillar. And crashing down came the temple of Dagon. And thousands of Philistines died on that very momentous day. And more of the Philistines died on that day than had died during the entire life of Samson. Now, much in this story has been tragedy, but there's no denying that this end of Samson's life, although in a way a tragedy, but in another way a great triumph. Nobody can deny that this was a great triumph in the end. So God used Samson, even in his death, to begin to deliver Israel from the Philistines. And really, what was God doing here? God was showing the Philistines who was truly God. The Philistines were giving glory to Dagon. Dagon has done this great thing. Dagon has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands. They were really doing spite to Samson, but also they were doing spite to the Lord, to the true God. And God, in the end, was showing who is boss, who is God. And it's not Dagon, it's the Lord. The Lord who strengthened Samson. And crashing down came Dagon's temple. Now the chapter ends with a very somber note in verse 31. Then his brethren and all the house of his father came down and took him and brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol in the burying place of Manoah his father. And he judged Israel 20 years. And with this note, the story of Samson comes full circle, because we remember at the beginning it was in Zorah that the angel of the Lord announced to Manoah's wife, you're barren, but you're going to conceive. You're going to have a child. And this child will begin to deliver Israel from the hands of the Philistines. He will be a Nazarite. That happened there around Zorah. But now Samson is dead. His body was taken by his family, placed in his father Manoah's tomb, and the mighty Samson was now resting with his fathers. The story of Samson, it is a story of tragedy, but it's also a story of triumph. How many of you think in your minds, well, Samson could have done so much better? He had such potential, and so much of it was unrealized. He could have done so much better with the gifts and the calling that God had given him. How disappointed it is that he didn't go all out in the service to God. You know, how much could Samson have done for God and for Israel if he only had done, you know, if he only had gone all out? And how tragic it is that Samson so often chose to gratify his own desires, his own lusts, doing what was right in his own eyes, instead of loving God and obeying God and doing what was right in his own eyes and in God's own eyes. But yet, in spite of all of Samson's poor choices and all of his foolishness and all of his sin and his pride and his self-centeredness, God still used Samson. By Samson's great strength, by his cunning, he triumphed time and time and time again against the Philistines. And he was used of God to begin to deliver Israel from their enemies. In a way, today we are let down by Samson. And in a way, Samson reminds us of Israel. You think of Israel, how much had God given Israel? God had called them to be a holy people. God had desired to do great things through Israel, but what did Israel do? Really spurned God and his gifts, squandered so many opportunities. Israel chose to do what they wanted to do instead of doing what God wanted them to do. Much of Israel's history is a story of tragedy. But what's going to happen in the end? There's going to be triumph for Israel in the end. But today, as we consider Samson's life, we can be thankful that God's plans are not thwarted by the foolishness of men. So here is Samson. We'd say Samson, in, at least in parts of his life, he was a foolish man, right? He was a self-centered man. He was a proud man. But as foolish and proud and self-centered as he was, that did not thwart God's plan for his life. God still used him to begin to deliver Israel from the Philistines. Now, we aren't going to put a stamp of approval on all of the things that Samson did, not by any means, but God used a very imperfect instrument called Samson to begin to deliver his people. And yes, much tragedy throughout the whole narrative, and sin brings tragedy, but in the end, God has triumph through Samson. And as we think about what God did through Samson, we think about even ourselves and others that we know, and we are far from perfect, and we make foolish choices sometimes, and we wonder sometimes, can God use me with all my imperfections, with all of my frailties, with all my weaknesses, with my sin? Can God use me? And we can be heartened, and we can be encouraged. We can take heart. God used Samson, and looking back through the other judges, God used Gideon. God used so many others too, right? God used so many ones that were far from perfect. God can use us, even though we're far from perfect. God's purpose is not negated by the sin of anyone, no matter how great that sin may be. Sin brings tragedy, but in the end, what will happen? God will triumph. God will triumph. He will bring victory to redeem sinners. He'll bring victory in the end. God will have the final say. He'll make everything right. And God makes everything right not because of the goodness of men, but because of his own goodness, his own righteousness, his own sovereignty. And it's all coming through Jesus Christ, the salvation and the restoration that is found in him. So today, let's rejoice in the goodness of God, the sovereignty of God, the faithfulness of God. Let's rest in all of these things. Let's rest in God himself. Let's exult in God's grace and his mercy. Yes, there is a world that is filled with tragedies, and even in our own lives, sometimes there are tragedies. Sometimes it's outside of our own doing. Sometimes it's because of our own doing. Sometimes it's because of sin. Sometimes not. But God is a God who is able to bring triumph even in the face of tragedy. This is the God that we serve. May we worship him today. Heavenly Father, we thank you for what we have been able to learn from the life of Samson. And many times we ourselves are disheartened by looking at the foolish choices that Samson made. But yet we realize you used this man, and you used him to further your plan. So I pray that we would be committed to doing what is right, to living a holy life, to following you with all of our hearts. But yet we realize that also we will do things that are not right, and we will sin, and we will make foolish choices. But help us to take heart that you are a God who forgives, and you are a God that can use us even in spite of our weaknesses. So help us to take heart from this. Help us to determine to serve you. But above all, we realize it's not us that can do anything great. It's you. And it's only because of your grace and your mercy, your faithfulness, your sovereignty, that anything good in this world comes about. So again, we thank you, we praise you, and pray these things in Jesus' name.